Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday afternoon. Joining us from the center, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, South Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Tim Bontemps.
Hello, everybody.
The new 76ers are available to play in this game tonight. Is that correct?
Except for Nick Batum, who's out with some personal reasons. I think he'll be back soon, but he's not playing today. But the rest of the guys, Kenny Martin Jr., Robert Covington, Marcus Morris, all should be in the lineup tonight in some form for the Sixers against Toronto.
I've never seen him called Kenyon Martin Jr. more than I have the last few days. He's KJ Martin, as far as I know. But yeah, he's been Kenyon Martin Jr.
Sort of goes back and I've seen it different ways over the course of his career. It goes back and forth. But yeah, KJ Martin, however you want to call him, he'll be in the lineup tonight for the Sixers.
Well, I've never spoken to him. And when I do, I'm going to ask him the way he prefers it. It's not going to say LeBron James Jr. It's going to say Bronny James, right? When he comes to the league?
You would think.
All right, joining us from Dallas, Texas. No one's taking his name. Bam McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Home of the undefeated Dallas Mavericks. That juggernaut, baby. One of two undefeated teams in the NBA.
I'll tell you what, when you beat the Bulls, you've accomplished something.
Just like when you beat those Memphis Grizzlies, which the Mavericks have also done. Everybody else who's played the Grizzlies.
That's right.
That's true. Well, so I know we're very early here. Some teams have only played three games, like the 76ers, who Bontemps will see tonight, who they're hosting the Raptors. Some teams have played five. Obviously, it's very early, but we do podcasts every couple of days here. So what are we going to do? Wait until December? Let's take a look at some teams that are struggling out of the gate. Now, on one hand, you would look at the first 2 weeks of the season and say it's a single-digit percentage of the season. We've seen many teams have bad starts. Famously, McMahon, didn't the 67-win Mavericks, the Dirk MVP year, didn't they start 1-4?
They started 0-4, won 67 games, and then got bounced by the We Believe Warriors in the first round. So that was a hell of a ride.
They start and finish not so good. But the point is, just because you get off to a bad start doesn't mean it. That said, there's also a lot of data that says who you are 15, 20 games into the season is kind of who you are. And we're getting into a chunk of that. So evaluate it what you will. But I'm going to say this, no matter how you want to slice it, the Memphis Grizzlies sitting there at 0-5, DFL in terms of offense to this point, not good. 0-5 and not trending in the right direction, McMahon. I know you spent some time there. Obviously, they're without Ja. Obviously, without Steven Adams. But this is not what the Grizzlies were hoping for, and that is a flashing red light what's going on in Memphis.
Yeah, I mean, they're the last winless team in the league after Dylan Brooks, their old buddy in the Houston Rockets, got a win last night. And look, there's obvious reasons why they're struggling so much. I mean, you call them excuses, whatever they are. They don't have the face of their franchise. Guess what? They don't have Ja Morant for the next 20 games at least. They don't have their starting center. Guess what? They don't have Steven Adams for the rest of the season. They don't have his backup. Guess what? They don't have Brandon Clark for several months, if not the rest of the season, as he comes back from an Achilles. Luke Kennard's been out. Okay. Santi Aldama's been out. You know, okay. Now Derrick Rose is out, a guy who they need to play significant minutes for at least the next 20 games. Veteran with knee problems is out with knee soreness. I mean, and man, it's not just that they've lost. Like, dude. This was a team that was down 25 points in the second half to the Washington Wizards. That's hard to do. They were down, I think, 114 points to the Utah Jazz last night. That's not exactly a juggernaut in the Western Conference. They're not just losing games. In a couple cases, it is just a really difficult to watch butt whooping. And, you know, frankly, they basically have three starters and just a bunch of guys that they're putting out there right now. All due respect to Zaire Williams, he has not proven that he's a quality rotation player, much less a starter. He's their starting small forward right now. All due respect to Xavier Tillman Sr., he's their third center who is forced into a starting role right now. And offensively, they're essentially playing 3-on-5 in a lot of situations, and it shows.
Well, they have...
What was their record last year when Ja didn't play? Do you remember the top of your head? It was very good.
No, 2 years ago, it was 20-4. 2 years ago, it was phenomenal. Last year, I want to say 11-10. I might be off again. It was a tick above 500. But, you know, listen, Tyus Jones was a huge...
Well, that's what I was getting to. So Tyus Jones, when Ja didn't play, Tyus Jones was a weapon. Very clearly, the top backup point guard in the league. Mm-hmm. He, with few exceptions, always held down the fort. And I understand Bontemps, the Marcus Smart trade. They wanted to get a leader in their locker room. That's what they went for. And they gave up Tyus Jones and a first round pick to get it done. And that may end up working out.
Two first round picks, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Was it two first?
Because it was one of their own and the Golden State pick.
Yeah.
Oh.
Tyus Jones and two firsts for Marcus Smart.
By the way, Jackson fact checks 20-5. 2 years ago, 11-10 last year. By the way, 11-10 sounds great.
Oh, yeah.
They would take 11-10 the next 21.
Listen, if they're a game above 500 when Ja comes back, they'd be doing backflips. They better get out of that.
Means they've had a nice turnaround. Yes, exactly.
Well, so Marcus Smart's production so far hasn't been bad. He shot the ball pretty well. Not great from three-point range. He's averaging 16 points and 6 assists. It's not like they haven't been getting that production, but that formula they had with Tyus Jones worked. And look, obviously they have injuries, Bontemps, but you know, moving off of Tyus Jones when you knew Ja was going to miss 25 games was a risk. And so far it's not been working out.
Well, look, I mean, Memphis is DFL in offensive rating, 102.5 points per 100 possessions. They're DFL in net rating. Minus, I believe, 11.2.
By the way, real quick, I know it's only been five games. The Celtics, who are far and away been the best team in the NBA so far, their net rating is plus 20. The Grizzlies' net rating is minus 11. So, like, over 100 possessions, the Celtics functionally are operating as 30 points better than the Grizzlies. 30 points. That's like what would happen if you had like an NBA team play like a MAC school. I mean, like that spread over a five game span is shocking. I'm sorry.
Or if you had the Utah Jazz play the Memphis Grizzlies.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, you look at that and like those numbers are awfully bad. When you look at over five games, and, you know, look, at the end of the day, like, yes, they, you know, the Tyus Jones for Marcus Smart deal, you can analyze that if you want. If they hadn't made that trade and they had Tyus Jones instead of Marcus Smart, I don't think this thing looks a lot different. And I think more than anything, you look at the way Memphis has operated the past several years, and we've given Zach Kleiman and those guys a lot of praise, deservedly so, for how they built this team. But at the end of the day, like, yeah, they, like you said, McMahon, they've had Santi Aldama out and Luke Kennard's been in and out with a concussion, but like, they're playing Jake LaRavia, who was a first-round pick. They're playing Zaire Williams, who was a first-round pick they traded up for. They're playing David Roddy, who's another first-round pick. Mm-hmm. Like, they drafted a lot of these guys. They drafted Xavier Tillman high in the second round. Like, these are all guys that they've drafted and developed, and they've gotten credit for having these guys on the team. And at the end of the day, these guys are, right now, not good enough. And the main core guys they have, Jaren Jackson Jr., has not had a good start to the season. Like, they've not been good enough. Like, not that they were, nobody thought they were going to go 22-3 in these 25 games, but also no one thought they were going to be 0-5, getting smoked by the Wizards, getting smoked by the Jazz. Like, it's one thing if you're losing games to good teams and you're shorthanded. When you're getting smoked by the Wizards, who are an abjectly terrible team, and the Jazz, who, while they have a good coach and Larry Market and some pieces, are not a very good team. And it's the kind of team that, especially after you start 0-4, like you come out in that game, you get a win and you start to get yourself right. Instead, you're down 30 at halftime. Like, yeah, it's 1 week of the season, which shouldn't write them off for the whole year. But like, there's really only one team in the league you got to look at right now and say should be some level of panic. And that is in Memphis with the way this has started, because this could not have gone worse.
Yeah, so and listen, Zach Kleinman has gotten a lot of credit, and deservedly so, for the Grizzlies' success over the last few years, including an Executive of the Year award. And a lot of that was him finding these jewels at the, you know, lower end of the first round. I mean, Desmond Bain, literally the last pick in the first round. The guy's a, you know, hadn't been an all-star, but is, you know, fringe all-star type of player. Santi Aldama has been a huge success story, number 30 overall pick. You know, Brandon Clark, unfortunately hurt now, but great pick in the 20s. But, you know, Zaire Williams was considered a reach. So was Jake LaRavia. So was David Roddy. And when you talk to people around the league, it was kind of like, yeah, boy, you know, they took those guys a lot higher than we had them on their board. But, man, given the Grizzlies' track record, like, you know, maybe they know something we don't, or basically nobody wanted to say it wasn't a good pick because of the respect they had for what the Grizzlies had done. But they're not getting much out of those guys, and that's a huge problem. You know, Marcus Smart's been put in a tough situation. Obviously,
great. He's leading the league, by the way, in steals per game. I was recently, he's averaging 3 steals a game.
Well, and listen, their three top guys are all playing over 30 minutes a game. They've played all 5 games, and when they're on the court, their offensive rating is 98.1, which is catastrophic, and they're getting outscored by 11 points per 100 possessions when those three guys are on the court together for 20 minutes a game. I mean, this isn't like they're not playing with, you know, like the Cavs picked up a win in New York last night with no Jared Allen, no Darius Garland on the second night of a back-to-back against a healthy Knicks team. RJ Barrett wasn't playing. Everybody else was out there. Like, it's not impossible to win games if you're down some players. And arguably, what would we say, 3 of their 4 best players are available, right? Like, it's not like they have nobody.
Right.
Like, they shouldn't be getting housed like this in these games.
Yeah. And like I said, I think Marcus Smart's been put in a tough situation, making the transition from Boston, where he was a huge part of a contender, to Memphis, where, let's be honest, it was a mess when he arrived, right? Just because of the way things played out over the last few months, over the last several months with Ja Morant, as well as the whole Steven Adams situation and all that. But like, now he has to be the fill-in point guard for 25 games. Then he has to transition to playing like an undersized small forward / backup point guard role. He has to be this leader as he's getting to know guys in the locker room. And, you know, after they lose to the Mavericks, which was a game, it wasn't a blowout, but like it was never really in doubt. He puts out on his social media, you know, some pictures, whatever. He says, "We're getting better every time we step out, one at a time. Guys are working their butt off. Love it. And where we head." You know, basically like this rah-rah type of thing. And then they just go out and it is a total failure to compete against a Jazz team that's not expected to, you know, be in the playoff mix. It's like, man. And honestly, like, listen, you got to wonder about the soul of this franchise right now. And who's at fault for that? The face of the franchise, who's gotten suspended for the second time in a matter of months, and whose career, you know, is like, he's threatening to screw up what should be a Hall of Fame type of career. Sorry. It's hard to have a functional culture when
you've got this team,
kind of black cloud lingering.
Listen, this team, I don't think they'd have gotten to the finals last year, but it was a soft target for them to get to the conference finals, and they were the number 2 seed.
Yeah.
So they may have already given that up by the way they got derailed last season. You know, this play-in tournament that begins on Friday, they are technically
not the play-in tournament, in-season tournament.
In-season tournament. I was just fine.
The Grizzlies at this point might be hoping the play-in tournament starts on Friday and they had an invite to it.
Well, they technically got a number 1 seed because the pools were drawn based on last year's standings. They were number 2 in the West.
Right.
And they were in this pool that I was saying was sort of the pool of death because they were in the same pool as the Suns and the Lakers. They're a number 1 seed in this thing. They're going to walk in 0-5. I mean,
yeah.
And there's some penalties. How it's gone.
And McMahon mentioned it before, but like, let's go back to last year in New York. Derrick Rose has no bigger fan in the league than Tom Thibodeau, right? I think we would agree. Derrick Rose did not play the vast majority of last season because he wasn't good enough to play. And in five, he's played four games, and they missed the fifth game with knee soreness. They're getting outscored by 16 points per 100 with him on the court. Like, having him as your best, like, I think Marcus is fine. He is actually better at point guard than people have ever given him credit for. And he's always wanted to be a point guard. And when Boston's offense the last couple of years has been at its best, it's been with Marcus at point guard. And obviously he's getting outscored by 11, as is Desmond Bane, which is not great. But when Jaren's out there, their offensive rating is under 98. And they're
getting
outscored
saying.
By 16
when
points.
When Tyus was out there with Bane and Jaren Jackson, it worked.
No, I understand
been
that.
Out there, it hasn't been working.
Well, yeah.
Again, though, he also with Steven Adams setting screens and gobbling up offensive rebound. Listen, as much as the focus is on all the mess that Ja Morant made last year, the suspension, the BS, all that, this was a 500 team last year, essentially, after Steven Adams went out. That was originally supposed to be a 3 to 5 week injury that's going to end up being about a season and a half. That has been a total gut punch. And then, obviously, the culture went into chaos last year. This team finished their season getting humiliated in the first round, talking all this, we fine in the West, yada, 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 we poke bears, this all this crap. Got spanked by the Lakers, put over their knee and whooped by 40 points to send them home, or to the club, I guess. And you know, they attempted to address the culture this season, like the Dylan Brooks thing. A lot of that was shot selection. Also, they just wanted to kind of tone everything down. You know, part of bringing in Marcus Smart and Derrick Rose is because they felt like these were veteran voices. They felt like these were guys that Ja Morant, you know, respected and hopefully would be good influences on him. Maybe that's still the case. You know, maybe there is hope. But man, you're talking about like there's massive cultural concerns, an 0-5 start, and a possibility so deep that it doesn't matter what happens once Ja comes back.
Yeah, I mean, there's a hole at center with the Steven Adams injury, and there's a gigantic hole at backup point guard because Derrick Rose, set aside whatever you think about him as a locker room impact, good enough to play.
One is hurt right now. He's got his knee soreness. You got to, like, with his history, that's a worry.
But my point is, you knew Ja Morant was missing a third of the season, mm-hmm. right? And your solution to that is we're going to have Derrick Rose play for a third of the season when Derrick Rose wasn't good enough to beat out Deuce McBride last year with the Knicks. Like, he's just not good enough. Yeah. And the numbers have borne that out. And because he did play some in the preseason, but you don't have Brandon Clark. You don't have Steven Adams. You know, you have Xavier Tillman out there. And look, we saw it this summer. Jaren Jackson Jr. is not a center. Mm-mm. You can't have him playing center. It was a disaster for team, a disaster for the Grizzlies.
And they went out and they signed Zach Biombo. You know, they have an extra spot after five games of Jaw suspension. They'll be there. They'll probably find a way to, you know, keep him after
assuming
that.
It helps.
That's such a massive hole. And listen, Biombo is a functional backup to third string center, but he's not solving all the problems.
No.
Okay. Another team that is on this list that I have to admit, I'm a little bit surprised that we are going to talk about on this list, is the Milwaukee Bucks. Now you may say, well, why are you talking about the Bucks? They're 2-2. Seems fine. Dame's had a couple of big games. They're 2-2 by the skin of their teeth. They won one game by 1 point, the opener against Philly, where Joel Embiid had a substandard performance. Doesn't matter. They were contributed to the substandard performance. Embiid was not good in that game. They won by one, but they won. The other game, they beat the Heat, who have not been good at home. And the Heat's third string was on the court in the fourth quarter, and the Bucks had to play until the final minute because they blew a big lead. Here's all I'm going to tell you about the Milwaukee Bucks. 1 year ago today, granted, we are super duper early, but 1 year ago today, the Bucks had played six games. Now they've played four, but 1 year ago today, they played six games. They were ranked number one in the league in defense at that point. They were giving up 100 and we're going to round up 103 points per 100 possessions defensively. It was actually 102.7, but let's just call it 103. Today, week and a half into the season, The Milwaukee Bucks ranked 29th in the NBA in defense. They're giving up 119 points per 100 possessions, 16 points worse over 100 possessions than they were a year ago. Now, granted, it is small sample size. Mm-hmm. The Bucks could have two good defensive performances in a row, and they could be back in the top five. Absolutely, no question. But they are getting destroyed at the rim. This was a team that's whole defensive strategy was, under Mike Budenholzer, was funnel the ball down to Brook Lopez and Giannis Antetokounmpo. They're two dynamic rim protectors. And, you know, even if it meant giving up those extra three-pointers, fine. Guys, Wednesday night in Toronto, the Raptors came in 1-3. They were behind the Grizzlies on offense.
Yes, they were dead last 30. In offense. Were.
Not only did they put up 130 points on the Bucks. Not only did their starting lineup, the Raptors' starting lineup, shoot 71% collectively, 71%. But this is the number I'm talking about. The Raptors had 66 paint points in that game and shot 19 for 22 in the restricted area. I'm sorry. Mm. Nobody came at the Bucks like that at the rim last year when they were the number one overall seed.
Through four games, the Bucks are giving up 75% shooting less than 5 feet from the basket.
That's
DFL.
That is stunning. With like you said, with Lopez and Giannis, I mean, hey, I get the Jrue Holiday for Damian Lillard swap was a significant downgrade defensively, but I didn't think this, and we'll see how it plays out. I didn't think this team could be bad defensively with Giannis and Lopez. You know, I'm not sure how close Giannis is to kind of peak physical form coming back from the knee surgery that he had this summer. Maybe there's a factor there. But also, you do have a rookie head coach who's replacing one of the best defensive head coaches in the league in Bud. Small sample size, like you said, but man, 130 to the Raptors. Their other loss was 127 to the Hawks. Like, awfully concerning.
Yeah, I mean, look, they have awful perimeter defense across the board. Now, that doesn't explain the 75% of the rim. You would think with Brook and Giannis, it would be better just by default than that. But Dame isn't guarding anybody. Malik Beasley isn't guarding anybody. Chris Middleton situation is incredibly concerning.
Yes.
I mean, there was all sorts of weird answers about him during the preseason. I talked to Chris in September before the start of camp, and he made it seem like everything was fine. He had been working out. He was feeling good. They get to camp. He's not really participating. He's now playing 16 minutes a night and not looking great when he's out there. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's a huge problem because if he's not good enough, they're in real trouble. Their bench looks very creaky across the board. And even the Giannis and Dame combination, which you would expect would be at least humming on offense, I mean, they're scoring 102 points per 100 when they're out there together, which is terrible. So
yeah,
I think that'll get better.
Right.
Obviously, I don't think they're going to be terrible all year offensively together, but I don't really see a path to the perimeter defense getting better. And when they, like, Tyrese Maxey tore them apart in the opener. And, like, I mean, you mentioned it, Brian. I'm going to be at the game in Boston in a couple weeks when they play the Celtics. Like, they have no prayer of guarding a team like Boston with all these guys who can attack them from all over the place. I mean, this has been my biggest concern about them from the jump is they are just really, really weak on the perimeter now. And maybe Brook and Giannis can make up for that. But if they're going to continue to struggle to stop shots at the rim, then they're going to be awful defensively.
Well, the thing about Middleton is that he's because they're, I mean, a 16 or 17 minute restriction. I mean, that's about as small of a minute restriction as you're ever going to see.
Right.
And the difficulty is it's hard to play him in real blocks of time. You know, like this is one of the things that drove Zion Williamson crazy when he first came back from his knee injury as his rookie year. They would play him in 5 minute segments and it drove him crazy. And he's still complaining about it to this day. Because there's for an NBA player who's used to getting into a rhythm, it's very hard to play such a short stint, especially when you're used to being a starter.
Well, you're almost better off if you're just playing him for one half or the other.
Well, and to that point,
just like the Kawhi plan.
Well, there was a weird. This was a weird thing last night. So last night, 90 seconds into the second half, Middleton's out of the game at halftime. Seems like he's done. 90 seconds into the second half, Brooke Lopez comes out. Middleton comes in. Brooke Lopez doesn't come back in the game until there's 9 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. And after the game, Eric Name tweeted it out, asked Adrian Griffin, the coach, why did that happen? And he said, I thought Chris was done, but he wasn't. So when I found out he wasn't, I put Chris in and then tried to go small. That's all it was. Brooke didn't do anything wrong, but I thought initially Chris was done with his minutes, but he had a few more, so wanted to throw him back in there. Like, it's also just sort of a sign of being a bit of a mess as a team if you're coming out of halftime and you're not aware that one of your star players who's on a minutes limit is not done with his minutes limit. Like, that's a weird thing to be happening at all, let alone meaning Brooke Lopez is punted for 15 minutes of the game.
Right. And there's, you know, that there's also been the strangeness of your lead assistant coach and experienced head coach resigning the week before the season started after, you know, some personality conflicts with the rookie head coach. That was odd. And it would be nice as far as, again, I think offensively Dame and Giannis are so good. That'll be fine. It would certainly be nice to have Terry Stotts around to kind of help facilitate the fineness of the offense. Malik Beasley on a minimum is your starting shooting guard. That's tough, man. I would have gone with Connaughton. I'm looking at defensive ratings right now. And again, 4-game sample size, you know, there can be noise here. Beasley's 125.9. The problem is Connaughton is the only guy on the team that's worse. He's 126.7. I don't know, man. I'm kind of regretting my decision to take the Bucks with the first pick of our wins pool.
I was very happy to have I'll take the Celtics.
Well, and by the way, Malik Beasley's 125 defensive rating in 30 minutes a game. I mean, he's not out there in some short stints. I mean, that's a lot of time. And that's really bad. And a combination of him and Dame in the backcourt, you ain't stopping anybody with that.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. Okay, moving on. One of my sayings that I've developed over my 20 years as I work on becoming an old man as fast as possible. A wise man once said, when's the best time to plant a tree? Last year. When is the best time to start a rebuild? Last year.
Last year.
What is one of the worst things, one of the worst positions to be in the NBA? To be in a rebuild and not know you're in a rebuild. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And with all that said as my preamble, I'd like to discuss the Chicago Bulls, who are 2-3. Had a couple of dramatic games.
Very easily, by the way, very, very easily could be 0-5. Very easily.
Right.
Won one of the dumbest games I've ever seen on Friday against the Raptors and got similarly lucky when the Pacers made several dumb decisions and missed 1,000 threes on Monday at home in a game that Indiana easily could have won and Chicago escaped from.
The Chicago Bulls, in my opinion, are in a rebuild and they don't know it.
Here's the problem. They're not in a rebuild. They've delayed. They're in purgatory.
But that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
They don't think that they are, but they are.
But they're not bad enough to be in a rebuild. They're not bad enough to benefit from being bad.
Well, I mean, maybe. Maybe.
They are pretty bad.
Oh, hey,
they are 28th in the league in shooting. They absolutely cannot shoot. Zach LaVine, the other night, I wish I had the box score in front of me. He scored 51 points.
I was about to look up. This is one of the all-time great box scores. Hold on.
What was his plus minus? I think he was minus 21.
He scored 51 in a double-digit loss to the Detroit.
They lost by 16. Zach,
by the way, an efficient 51. 51 on 19 to 33 shooting. Yep. 7 of 13 from three-point range. So he had 51 points, zero assists, and was a minus 8.
Okay, I thought it was worse than that. And maybe it just felt worse than that.
It was worse than that, I believe, earlier in the game. And then they went on a bit of a push later, and he cut it down. So
he scored 51. The rest of his teammates scored 51, and they lost the game by 16.
I like Zach LaVine. I liked him as a play. I liked him a lot in the 21 Olympics in Tokyo. All he does is shoot. He does not defend.
Yeah.
All he does is shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not a bad guy, but I think it drives his teammates crazy.
Well, listen, we talked about earlier, the Memphis guys are healthy and not playing well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the three guys for the Bulls, the guys they're building this thing around, Zach LaVine, Nick Vucevic, DeMar DeRozan, played all five games. They played 107 minutes together, third most on the team. Their offensive rating with three offense first guys on the court, including a guy who scored 51 in a game, is 98.2. They're getting outscored by 16 points per 100 possessions with their three best players together on the court over five games.
We talked about the Vucevic trade when they made it, it being this win now move that didn't move the needle. And obviously it looks horrific now that Franz Wagner is a stud, much less.
Listen, man, you could go down this path because
Franz Wagner and Wendell Carter Jr. both.
And they punted on Lowry Markkanen.
Yeah. And
I mean, I'm going to give him a bit of a pass on Lowry Markkanen because nobody, including Cleveland, predicted what Lowry Markkanen was going to be when he ended up in Utah. That's one of the most remarkable turnarounds ever.
$60 million because they believed him as a player.
Right. I mean, sure. They signed him to a little bit above the mid-level. Yeah. I mean, I'll give Chicago a bit of a pass on that one.
It's blown up in their face, but at the time, we weren't killing him for that, but yeah, you know, we damn sure questioned the Vooch trade at the time, right? And then the contract this summer, again, that's the ultimate, what are you doing?
That's what I'm saying. They're in a rebuild and they don't know they're in a rebuild.
Well, yeah. and here's
they don't know
it. Well, here's the other thing. If you're in a rebuild, right, in theory, you're going to be trying to have your rebuild go around a guy who is 22 years old and was picked fourth in the draft, right? That seems like a guy you'd want to be building the rebuild around. McMahon, you were at the game last night in Dallas. How many points did Patrick Williams score in the game last night?
I'd have to look. Only thing I recall him doing off.
You're not going to remember a basket.
You're not going to remember a basket because he scored 0 points.
Okay, I remember a shot. I remember an open corner three that he missed by approximately 13 feet.
Yep. So last night in the game,
he might have landed out of bounds on the other side of the floor. My God.
Last night in the game, in 25 minutes, he took six shots. He took five threes. He missed all of them. For the season so far, Patrick Williams in five games has scored 20 points total. He is 8 for 30 from the field. He is 2 for 16 from three. And he has more turnovers than made threes and more turnovers than free throws, which he is 2 for 2. More turnovers than free throws in five games.
he's got as many three-pointers made as he does zero-point games. Two.
It's
he
amazing.
He has 2 0-point games.
So he has 20 points. That is 1 point for each $1 million he thought he deserved per year on an extension.
Well, I mean, certainly one that I think Dallas or Chicago should feel good to some extent, at least more than some extent, that he didn't sign. And look, he is in the starting lineup. How can he be in the starting lineup? Like, this is a disaster. I mean, you have to put, whether it's Torrey Craig or Alex Caruso or somebody, like, you can't have this guy just continually running out there doing nothing for half the game.
The other night, when they had the home game where they won against Toronto, Alex Caruso gets the steal at one end, goes down at the other end, hits the shot on the baseline to win the game.
Right in front of the bench.
Patrick Williams had to give an interview because as his team exploded in celebration on camera, and I'm not even talking about some side camera that wasn't on screen, on the same camera angle that Alex Caruso hit the shot, you just see Patrick Williams like walk away out of the shot like a zombie. His whole team runs to Alex Caruso to celebrate the win. He walks out of the shot like a zombie. I mean, yeah. It made Anthony Davis's move when LeBron broke the record last year seem understandable. But you know, he had to give an interview. I saw it in The Athletic. He may have said it to the other local media members. I saw it in The Athletic where he was explaining that he was going over to fist bump a teammate and that his teammates understand that he's very subdued. That's his personality type. I'm just saying he had to give an interview to explain why he wasn't supporting a teammate. That's also part of this spectacular first five games for him.
Yeah, and by the way, Lonzo Ball hasn't played in 2.5 years.
I was going to say,
not their fault. That's not their fault.
Well, you know what? It is though, because if you're building this whole thing around a guy who has extensive knee issues, and then he has knee issues, like, that is your fault.
Wow.
Like, as well, a buyer,
it's not their fault he's been hurt, but but look at our record when Lonzo was healthy. Dude, like, that's ancient history and probably, unfortunately, never happening again. So, like, that is irrelevant to the Bulls conversation in the here and now. The Bulls conversation in the here and now, like you said, Wendy, is you're rebuilding. Act like it. And
well, here's the thing, like, by the way, Coby White, who I like as a player, I've liked since he came in the league. They signed him to a $30 million extension. He's off to a miserable start.
Yeah. I mean, he's not a point guard. He's a sixth man off the bench. He's playing point guard. That's not going well at all.
Here's, I'm just going to say this. DeMar DeRozan has not extended his contract. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the reason he hasn't extended, I mean, they talked about it, but they can't agree on an extension. I don't know if it's money or years or whatever. This is what I'm talking about. Make a decision. Either extend DeMar DeRozan or trade him. Well, the fact that he's still there is an indication. That's what I'm saying. They don't understand they're in a rebuild.
Let me ask you this.
It's coming down the pike and it's going to slap him right in the face.
That's why I say to McMahon's point, it might not be a situation. It might be a situation where they sort of muddle their way to 40 wins and they're not bad enough to be in a rebuild.
Well, I'm
just saying, I don't.
Chris Russo here. This team wins 40 games, I will be stunned.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any way.
I don't think that's happening either.
30-something win team, so they're probably picking what, 8, 9, 10. They are in purgatory.
They can look in the mirror and deny it all they want. They can produce any sort of reams of data. They can bring out their whiteboard and present everything different. This is a team that's in a, and you know what the worst part about it is? They haven't even done the hard part yet. The hard part's tearing it down. Well, the hard part's building it up, but they haven't even begun the process yet, but it's already happening.
The
ground underneath them is hollowed out.
Let's hypothetically say Bulls management listens to this podcast and is inspired to begin the teardown process. DeRozan in the last year of his contract, obviously the guy is a scorer, you know, a vet with a good reputation in terms of character and all that. You know, I think that you can get something, a pick. So, you know, I can get something of value there. Let me ask you this. Who do you think you could get more value for in the trade market? And I actually had this conversation with somebody last night. Zach LaVine, with the numbers that he puts up, but also that contract and the flaws that you discussed, or Alex Caruso, Oh boy, you're talking about one of the best on-ball defenders in the league, a very reasonable contract, a guy who how much could a Milwaukee
should, not they should they have trade assets? Him. They should trade them both. Like, there's contenders that would definitely give up stuff for Alex Caruso. I'm sure he's exactly the kind of guy that teams would be wanting to try to get on that contract and with the impact he can have. And this team stinks. Like, it makes sense to trade Alex Caruso now because his value is only going to go down as he gets a little bit older. And I mean, he's a guy who plays through a bunch of injuries. He only ever plays like 65 games a year because he plays so hard. But like, yeah, they should trade both of them.
I wonder if Caruso has more trade value than LaVine. He might, because of the contracts.
He might. I mean, you only need one team to really believe in a guy like Zach to give up a decent amount for him. But look, like, I mean, he's sort of the guard equivalent of his old teammate in Minnesota, right? Like, both those guys are on very large contracts and are very talented offensive players.
You know what, though?
Who have big time questions about him.
The Minnesota Timberwolves have the number one defense in the league at the moment.
And beat the mess out of the Nuggets last night.
That's right.
Sure did.
The Timberwolves are a team, their record is 2-2, similar as the Bucks. Not similar, it's exact same.
It is similar. That's not wrong.
The readout on the two teams is quite different. And by the way, like, Towns hasn't made a shot yet. He's shooting terribly. I don't have his numbers in front of me. But that's another topic for another day.
If Minnesota finishes league first in defense, they'll feel pretty good.
I don't think that's going to happen. I'm just saying.
You know what, though? They've got three elite defensive players in the starting lineup. Gobert with his three Defensive Player of the Year awards. Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels. They do have three absolute, like, top-end defensive players. Both wings and the big man.
Anthony Edwards can kill you on the perimeter with those arms. Kill you.
Yep.
So, okay. Next up on the Hit Parade.
Hey, feel good edition of the Hoop Collective.
The Miami Heat are 1-4, and they've played a tough schedule so far. They had a 3-game road trip where they played Boston, Milwaukee. And who else was on that road trip?
Played Minnesota, remember? The second night of a back-to-back when Jimmy didn't play and Bam didn't play against Milwaukee.
Which they got permission for. They asked permission for Jimmy Butler not to play, and they were granted a reprieve on the player participation policy.
Hey, just don't ask Eric Spoelstra about it, because Spo's not talking about injuries anymore the rest of the season.
He is Spo's in a bad mood, and I get it. Tyler Hero, back from injury, is averaging a career-high 26 points a game. Firing shots in from left and right. And they rank as the number 24 offense to this point. They are not scoring. They were not scoring last year. Mm-hmm. Even when times were good, they were not scoring. They are really not scoring now. And Tyler's gunning is not helping them on balance. He may help them in individual possessions. They're in the middle of the pack defensively, but what's happening to them right now, they can't score. Their offense is just withered. You know,
Jimmy's off to a slow start.
Yeah, they had a tough schedule, but then they went home and took it on the chin from the Nets Wednesday night. And look, the Heat are famous for improving as the season goes along.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a lot of improvement to do because it's not off to the great start there.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out there over time. I think they'll be better. They have had a very difficult start. They should have won the game Wednesday night against Brooklyn. They blew a lead, pretty big lead late, and lost. I mean, if they win that game, obviously we're talking a 5-game sample size. It looks a lot different if they win that game. But they barely beat Detroit in the opener, needed sort of a miracle to escape blowing a lead in that game. And look, last year, this team was a 500-ish team the entire season. And, you know, Max Strus and Gabe Vincent couldn't hit a shot during the regular season. And then those two and Caleb Martin went incendiary in the playoffs, and Jimmy was great, and they won three series and had a remarkable run to the finals. But the 82 game sample there told one story, and the 16 game sample told a far different story. And at least so Alter. Far, it's looking like the 82 game sample was more accurate. And there's a reason why the Heat were trying to get Dame and then trying to get Jrue Holiday. Like, I think they knew they needed to get a guy on the perimeter, and they didn't get either of them. And so they're, you know, the Heat always are ready for another guy to come down the pipe. I'm sure someone else will at some point. But at the end of the day, they are what they are, and it's a middling team. And that's what they look like.
And their march to the finals after a mediocre regular season and kind of, I mean, we just talked about the Bulls being such a mess. The Bulls were up with what, 3 minutes left in the second playing game? Yes. Against the Heat.
Yes.
And then they beat the Bucks. They beat the Celtics, you know, march to the NBA finals. I don't think that necessarily like incentivized the Heat's vets to really care about the regular season. And that's a dangerous mentality to think, all right, kind of coast through the regular season, come playoff time, we'll get it together. That's a tough way to live.
They, you know, the thing about it is they are definitely upwardly mobile in terms of what they can do trade-wise, but they don't historically make big in-season moves. I mean, they have like a couple of times. I think they traded for Sean Marion. Goran Dragic, right. So it could happen, but historically they've done their big work in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
And what they basically rely on is internal improvement, which they have a immaculate record of. So,
and their internal improvement got paid by other teams.
True, but they've always been able to find other guys to do that. Before we go, I think also, basically, I think Bontemps wants to talk about the Knicks, so he keeps watching play. He was at their game against the Cavs on Wednesday night. I'm not as worried about the Knicks as Bontemps. They're 2-3. I'm not as worried about the Knicks as Bontemps might be. They're number 2 in defense so far. So they're getting, you know, Thibodeau-style defense. I'm sure that Bontemps is going to bring up Julius Randle, and I will let you say Bontemps about Julius Randle. But I just want to give this incredible stat from our guy, Stats Williams at Stats and Information. This is one for the books right here. Hold on. I want to make sure I get it exactly right. And I just got signed out of our system. Hold on one second.
I feel like we're sitting in like a 64 Impala with hydraulics with your camera, by the way.
Oh, really? By the way, I was in LA recently.
We're one of Devin Booker's rides here.
Low rider featuring Wendy.
Well, when I type my...
You're pounding.
Okay. All right, sorry. All right, here we go.
All right, after
a lot happened.
Okay.
Okay. He went 3 of 15 from the field against the Cavs in the second night of their home and home on Wednesday night, the one the Cavs won. He's shooting 27.6% this season. That is the worst through 5 games by any player with at least 75 attempts. You're talking about a lot of attempts. Since Jim Jackson in 2000. So he's off to basically the worst volume shooting start to a season in 23 years.
In this century.
Well, 2000 was this century.
Well, I guess the 2000-2001 season. So yeah, that would have been the 2000-2001 right. season. So yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's mainly what I was going to bring up. I mean, I do think the Knicks will generally be fine. They have missed some shots early. They had a fairly tough schedule early on. But again, they're playing the Cavs without Darius Garland, without Jared Allen, second night of a back-to-back at home, chance to win the season series against them in the first week of the season against a team they could be fighting with for seeding later. And Julius was horrendous. For the season so far, he is 2 for 16 in the restricted area, which seems impossible given you're talking about one of the biggest and most strongest, one of the biggest and strongest guys in the league.
When do they play the Bucks?
The Bucks on Friday in the first game of the in-season tournament. So we will see how that looks.
An immovable force meets an impenetrable object, or however you say that.
Yeah, that's something like that. But yeah, I mean, he's 7 for 23 on shots within 5 feet of the basket. He can't hit a three. And Julius has had this very up and down, like awesome one season, bad the next, awesome one season, bad the next. We're in the bad season in that up and down. So, I mean, maybe that will continue, but the Knicks, the way the Knicks are built, they cannot afford to have Julius Randle just be bad. Like they need his offense on a nightly basis. They're not a team that's going to put up a buck 35 on a regular basis. Like they're grinding, they're going to grind out games, and he needs to be good. And if he is playing like he did last night and not hitting any shots and looking like a mess offensively, then they are going to run into a lot of trouble. And it definitely is something that bears watching. And it'll be very interesting to see how he looks going up against Giannis on Friday, because that in theory should be another pretty tough matchup for him. Now, like we talked about, the Bucks are giving up 75% shooting at the rim, so maybe that'll change, but certainly hasn't been a good start to the season for him. And it was, I think, a very, very bad loss for the Knicks, given what that game had on the table for him that they let get away at home on Wednesday night.
Well, the good news is it's a pretty chill media market, so I'm sure there's not like any overreacting or, you know, any kind of external pressure being applied.
Well, I mean, look, it was interesting. I mean, he's obviously not in the market, but you even have people like Charles Barkley on TV the other night after they beat the Cavs by 25 with those guys out, saying, this team isn't going anywhere. They got to trade for somebody.
Well, and that is like, what's the conversation about the Knicks all off season? It's, hey, you know, they've got these picks. Like, it was, can they get Giannis? And then Giannis signs extension. What's up with Embiid? And like, it's all about who's the star they're going to get. Well, that's all great, but that means for the majority of the players on the roster, you know, it's kind of the same. Am I going to be here after the trade deadline next summer? Like, that uncertainty isn't necessarily easy to deal with when you're the one it could affect.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Well, the in-season tournament is beginning on Friday. So as a review, and we'll be talking about it obviously over the next month, but over the next 4 weeks, there's six different groups. Three groups made up of six groups of five. Three from each conference, you know, three in the East, three in the West. You play the other four teams in your group. Two of the games are at home. Two of the games are on the road. They are played the next, Tuesdays. And how many of the next, they're all the games are on Friday and Tuesday over the next 4 weeks.
These cool courts, then you know it's an in-season tournament game.
Yeah, which I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I understand what the league did. What the league wants to do is they want you, as soon as you see a game that is an in-season tournament game, they want you to recognize that it's different, which is why they've come up with all these different court designs. And like, I'm never a designer. I'm the person who, like, somebody will show a new pair of shoes and I'll be like, are these good or bad? What does the world think about these? Because sometimes they say they're fire and I'm like, I didn't know. Sometimes they say they're awful. I'm like, oh, they look fine to me. I don't know. The courts kind of look cool to me. I don't know. But the problem is that the fact that they need to do this is an admission from the league that right now it's style over substance. Now, at some point, and maybe it's in 2 weeks, maybe it's in 2 years, maybe it's in 8 years, they're hoping that it'll be substance over style. But whenever you try to create tradition, there's going to be stumbling. Traditions happen organically, by and large. Sometimes they happen due to events that take place on the court. Sometimes they happen due to region. You know, you have traditional rivalries and stuff that happen, but almost all organic or spatial. They're not created. They didn't create Cleveland and Pittsburgh and then decide to make them football rivals, or create Oklahoma and Texas and decide to make them rivals. It just happened over the course of decades. And this is sort of a mishmash of these groups. You know, the only, you know, probably one of the only interesting things in terms of this group play is that Sacramento and Golden State are in the same group. They obviously played in the playoffs last year. They've staged two tremendous games early this season. It was just another 1-point game on Wednesday night that the Warriors won with a Klay Thompson shot right at the end. They are in the same group and play each other. I think they play each other the last game of their group play. I think it's on November 28th. That potentially could be whether they advance or not. That could be kind of good, but that would only be good because of their rivalry from the playoffs earlier this year, not because of the in-season tournament itself. So you're starting off asking a lot, trying to create tradition. And the fact that they have to create these courts where the trophy is prominently displayed is so that you know what the trophy looks like and that you know you're watching something different. You're not going to, like, if I just turned on an NCAA game, even though they play with specialty courts too, you would probably know the difference between an NCAA tournament game by watching it versus a November, you know, non-conference.
Well, you know, because of the time of the year.
True. There's a bunch of different reasons why you know. In this case,
there is also a giant sign on the court that says March Madness.
I know, but before there was a sign that said March Madness, you still knew. Okay.
Yeah. No, for sure. For sure. For sure. I'm not arguing.
All right. But anyway, so as a quick, you know, rehash, even to me, six groups, the winner of each group advances to the quarterfinals. Every team this year only has 80 games on their schedule.
Yeah, these count as regular season games, which I think is critical, because if it was like non-regular season, totally separate, nobody would have cared.
I agree. So they're regular season games. When the Bucks and Knicks play, which is one of the featured games of the first night, that's a game on ESPN, that game counts as well. So anyway, the winners of the six groups advance to the quarterfinals, which haven't, they're going to be on December 4th. If you don't advance, you get two new games scheduled on your schedule. I think on December 6th and 8th. Right now, everybody's holding their arenas open on December 6th and 8th, but they don't know who they're going to play. If they don't advance, then they get two fresh games, one home, one road, and they get their 82 games.
You know who loves that? Video coordinators around the league just love not having any clue what might be on the schedule.
How about the travel planners who don't know if they got to book a flight?
There's especially in like New York in December. We don't need to pull for NBA teams to find the Knicks. Let's say the Knicks and Nets both don't make the, and they are hosting games the first week of December. Teams are going to be paying crazy rates in New York to get into those hotels.
Yeah. So anyway, then two teams are the wild card teams, when one in each conference who has the best record. There's got to be a whole host of tiebreakers. I don't know what they are.
There's not that many tiebreakers. There's one loss record, and then if they have the same one loss record, it's point differential. That's the end of the list.
Okay.
Pretty sure.
There's only four games being played. There's a good chance there's going to be some ties.
No, for sure. I mean, there probably will be multiple teams with 3-1 records, you would think, and then it will come down to point differential.
And then
in that case, these coaches better coach to the buzzer in all these games, right? Because
I think after point differential, if there's a time point differential, I think they should each pick one guy and play a game of horse.
No, knockout. I can't sit around for a whole game of horse. Knockout. That's the way it is. So the groups were established based on last season's records. So like I said, the Grizzlies are technically a 1 seed and the Lakers are technically a 3 seed. But then they're in the same group. I think they might be in Las Vegas.
Oh, that should be a fun weekend.
The quarterfinals will be at regular NBA arenas, and the semifinals and finals are at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, December 7th and 9th, I believe.
Yeah,
7th and 9th.
It'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. I think it I think it's going to be a fun thing. I'm more bullish on it than most. I think it's going to be an interesting wrinkle in the season. I think if it causes people to care slightly more in what's clearly the least interesting part of the season from an interest and engagement standpoint, I think that's a win for the league. And I have a story that's running today on our website setting up the in-season tournament. And I talked to a bunch of players and coaches about it. And I have to admit, I was a little surprised at the amount of excitement and enthusiasm that I heard about it. I thought there would be, I went into this sort of assuming there would be a lot of shrugging of shoulders and apathy. And I think guys in the league, players are generally intrigued by the idea. And I was talking to somebody from a team yesterday who said they had a couple of players asking them sort of what are the rules of this thing? How does it work? Like, they were kind of into it. And look, I also don't think it's lost on these guys that there's a chance to make some money.
Exactly.
I mean, I asked Tobias Harris, mm-hmm. and he just started laughing when I asked if there'd be interest in, you know, playing this thing out. And he was like, look, man, it's a lot of money at stake. And, you know, Dame Lillard talked about the fact that it's basically doubling a two-way player salary for the year. That was what he was excited about. Like, there's some real stakes in that sense.
When you talk about the money in this thing, you know, 500 for the winner, 500 grand for the winners per player, right? And then that is, hey, that's a nice chunk of change, especially, you know, the guys on the lower end of the roster. But if this thing is successful, if this thing is something that the NBA is able to sell in the upcoming TV negotiations, that's where the money is. And that's
right.
Like for the max guys, hey, if it's bumping your max up a chunk of change, you know, for the minimum guys, if it's bumping that minimum up, like that's where the smart players should really be invested in the success.
Well, I agree with you. Smart players understand that this being a success could have instantaneous ramifications because they're not selling. They're selling it now. The TV negotiations are now. Mm-hmm. They're going to be probably done between now and a year from now, next summer, next fall. If somebody wants to buy this thing, they're going to maybe base it on how this goes.
Yep.
And if you really play to care, if you play like you know that and you want to grow the pie, selling this thing for $1 billion could absolutely be a huge thing. And not just the TV rights, but the naming rights and all that stuff.
Right.
That said, over the last 7 or 8 years, basically since the NBA got the big injection of money in 2016, what have players, even smart players, done to show that they put NBA business first? It's extremely rare. The reason they have to come up with these rules about resting is because teams and players aren't putting NBA business first. Maybe they shouldn't. I'm just telling you, if you expect that all of a sudden to change, I would just say that's not the way things have been going.
Well, there was obviously a lot of interest in whether Kawhi Leonard or Paul George would play both halves of this back-to-back, which they did against the Lakers on national TV. The national TV game certainly falls under the new policy. Kawhi played 40 minutes, I think 41 minutes in the overtime game. Looked great. But for example, Jimmy Butler, we talked about earlier, sat out second night of a back-to-back in Minnesota on Saturday, which again, he's in his mid-30s. I get why they did it, but that's a thing. Zion Williamson is going to sit out the second half of a back-to-back tonight for the Pelicans against Detroit at home. Again, like, not a national TV game. Zion has the definition of a serious injury history. I get it, but it's not like guys sitting out is going to go away. And there, certainly this policy, as we have discussed, you know, McMahon found the rules and sent them to us, I believe, yesterday. There's an exception at the bottom for this policy includes exceptions for injuries, personal reasons, and pre-approved back-to-back restrictions based on a player's age, career workload, or serious injury history, which certainly covers a lot of stuff. So,
by the way, Lawrence Frank, the president of the Clippers, he had a press conference on Wednesday to talk about the James Harden trade, and he got asked about Kawhi and Paul George playing in back-to-backs, and this was his quote. The Kawhi and PG rest thing is kind of bull bleep. But he didn't say bleep. There's a difference between injuries and rest. These guys work too hard for their reputations to be impacted.
What are we supposed to have Lawrence Frank say?
He's on the record.
What's he supposed to do? I know. What's he supposed to say?
He said what he's supposed to say.
No comment.
I mean, come on. Rolling our eyes.
Yeah, I mean, come on. He's doing his job.
I agree, and we're doing.
Let Lawrence celebrate. Let Lawrence celebrate his trade, like Steve Ballmer was celebrating the Intuit Dome on the broadcast with our guy George Sedano last night. By the way, I was watching that game with the sound off last night while I was out and saw it, and I just saw Steve Ballmer pumping his arms and waving his fists, and I figured he was talking about James Harden. Then I saw the clip today, and it was all about the Intuit Dome. I was like, oh, okay, we're talking about the arena.
He honestly, and like he could be right, but like this. The wall, his 51 rows of uninterrupted stands. He has talked about this thing for 5 years, his 51 rows.
I'm fascinated to see this arena. I've heard more about it than any arena in the history of the league. I mean, I'm genuinely curious to see what the thing is going to look like.
I'm a little upset about the Harden trade. And it's not the Harden trade that happened.
Yeah, what's the issue?
The podcast that followed it. Wendy, you had bond Timps on without me. I thought the Timbs were a package deal. And I told you, boys, I know how T.O. feels now. Romo and Witten were just huddled up in the hotel room, drawing up plays behind his back.
Listen, when the Kyrie debacle in Dallas happens inevitably, I'm sure there will be multiple pods when you are on without me, I'm sure.
Let's just pulling the curtain back. I just want you to know, McMahon, I mean, this isn't being recorded. It won't be on the podcast, I'm sure. I brought up this concern to Bontemps because I wanted Bontemps on the podcast because there was nobody at the company who knows the 76ers better than Bontemps. And Bontemps has been there in training camp. He was there for their opener. He was there for a bunch of their games. He was there the night before the trade. Mm-hmm. He was in Philly when we did it. Mm-hmm. I said, well, do you think McMahon will be okay with it? And Bontemps said that. Well, listen, if Kyrie were getting traded, you would want McMahon on. And that was a compelling argument. And
well, listen,
he was booked.
You can't spell Bontemps without an M and an E.
Well, it was more to say also to not be mean to our guy Kevin Pelton, who he'd already asked to be on, and like can't be booting the machine to have you come on.
No, can't be booting the machine. Another M and E in that. two big winners in that Harden deal: James Harden, Sam Presti, baby, the Oklahoma.
Well, three big winners. This guy right here, big winner, big winner.
Yeah, listen, I know Wendy doesn't like that that Thunder involvement, but I'm just telling you, now they're down to only 14 first round picks.
Everybody's praising the Thunder for this smash.
I got a lot of comments about Bryant's take on that trade. Did you, McMahon? Oh, yeah. I assume you did.
Here's my take. The LA Clippers traded the same pick twice for two different star players.
No, hello? But they didn't. They didn't. That because the pick.
Oh, oh but they did.
Most
oh,
likely,
but they did.
Thunder's
they
own
traded
pick.
The same pick.
No, they didn't.
For Paul George that they traded for James Harden. Yes, they did.
We will revisit this.
They traded
at the end
the same
of the 26-27 season.
We certainly
I've got a
will.
Feeling that swap when Kawhi and Harden and Paul George and Russell Westbrook are going to probably be chilling somewhere on a beach. I got a feeling that swap. Years down the road here could be pretty juicy.
True or false? 4/5 years away, an unprotected pick is more valuable than an unprotected.
Okay,
swap.
Here, first of all, the pick.
True or false?
That's not. It's not a question you can answer in a vacuum.
It's a bad.
It absolutely is.
Well,
there's never any vacuums in life.
The least
Your Honor, permission to treat the witness as hostile. You will answer the question yes or no.
Go for it.
Is an unprotected pick or an unprotected swap more available 4 or 5 years away?
In different situations, both things are more valuable. That's the answer.
And it's not an unprotected
Your Honor, I request that the witness answer yes or no.
That's not a yes or no question.
I request that the prosecutor ask a question that makes sense. It's the least favorable.
You guys would be thrown right out.
It's the least favorable of three picks.
If I could predict the future, I would make the best pick trades of all time.
Listen, Brian, if the Thunder give up a lottery pick in that trade, it means they have two lottery picks. And they'll have a swap the following year to potentially give them another lottery pick.
Now, I will say the Rockets pick is top four protected. So, like, the worst case scenario is the Thunder draft number one overall, have to give up number two, and then don't get the Rockets pick. That's the worst case scenario. The most likely scenario is they're getting two picks in the pretty early,
in the middle of the draft.
And they're giving up something in the 20s, because I've got a feeling the Thunder will be pretty good by 26, 27.
True or false? The Clippers traded the same pick for two different star players. Is that true or false?
False.
False, because the
I'm sorry. Did they trade their 2026 first-round pick
for
Paul George?
They didn't necessarily
trade their 2026 first-round pick for Paul George.
For Paul George, yes.
Did they trade their 2026 first-round pick for James Harden?
No, not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
The Thunder are trading a pick. It could be the Thunder's pick.
It could be the Rockets pick.
It could be the Rockets pick. Maybe phase two will turn into phase three and they'll be winning 60 games by then.
Yeah.
Listen, man.
Clutch City.
Here's the thing. Here's a piece of information that we don't have. Only the Clippers have it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did the Clippers have another way to get a first round pick without giving up that swap?
Well, yes, they had their own pick they could trade.
Well, I know, but that pick wasn't, they weren't trading that pick. So did they have another way
because to get a first round pick? Because they got another one. Because they got another pick.
That's what I'm saying.
Listen, all I know is
this. The Clippers' value was tremendous
on
that transaction.
All these years later, Sam Presti finally won a James Harden trade.
Well, listen, here's what we do know. Sam Presti is just charitable beyond words in trades.
He is not.
He doesn't. He never maximizes leverage. He never gets stuff out of deals ever.
No.
Hey, know what he did? He said, "Hey, thanks for SGA. Thanks for Jalen Williams.
I'm going to give you guys an out.
To come. Let me do you a solid.
I'm going to do you a solid.
I'm saying, listen. Here's what I'm saying. The Thunder, when they enter negotiations on picks, are like no other team out there because of the portfolio picks.
So
they have a quantity / quality problem. They are highly incentivized to make a trade that improves the quality of their picks and reduces the quantity because of the quantity that they have. They have a conundrum self-created that puts them in position to do that. And that's what they did.
They made
a quality for quantity trade. But on balance, trading a first for a swap undefined 4 and 5 years away is great value for the Clippers. Period.
I mean, no, it's not that simple.
We'll see.
It's just not that simple. And for, as we've talked about privately, since we're now doing this publicly on the pod, for most teams, it would not make sense to do the trade from that standpoint. Because for most teams, like for the Sixers, for example, who are picked short, getting a pick, even if it's a pick that's probably going to be in the back half of the first round, is better than having a swap from a trade perspective. For the Thunder, I don't think they have a quantity over quality problem. I think they have the flexibility to approach deals in the manner they choose to. Like, for example, when they went and got the 11th pick.
They have a quantity over quality luxury.
That's right. Like when they went and got the 11th pick in the draft to draft
Usman
Jang.
I'll agree with that.
They used protected, not so great picks to get a higher quality pick and draft a player in the lottery they liked. In this scenario, they traded a pick that's probably going to be in the 20s on probabilities. Obviously, you don't know. Maybe everything will go haywire and it'll be 10th. But they probably traded a pick in the 20s for a swap that has much higher upside. That is what they did. So in this scenario, yes, the value is good for them.
The value for the Clippers was excellent when they made this trade. They made an excellent.
We'll see that. I mean, maybe they'll give up a swap like the Nets did, and it'll be the number one pick in the draft.
Maybe it will.
See how I just played the TO role and caused big time team chemistry? Like just throwing a bomb.
There's no team chemistry issues. I've gotten many comments about.
Trust me, I've got issues.
Well, I mean, you always have issues.
I got issues like Draymond did with Jordan Poole.
We got to end on this. So yesterday, Draymond Green, after they have a great win, Klay Thompson hits a game-winning three or a game-winning jumper to beat the Kings in Sacramento. Great win for them. Draymond Green, after the game, is talking about team chemistry last year, talking about team chemistry with the Warriors, and This is what he had to say. Quote, last year, we had an awful team as far as chemistry goes. Last year was horse bleep. Hard to come to work. Not fun. This year, you see the joy on guys' face when they come in the building. This is a group that likes being together. To say with a straight face that the chemistry on the team last year was bad when you punched your teammate in the face in training camp is one of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen anyone say in a press conference.
Well, his chemistry is great because now he's got the $100 million contract.
That's right.
Last year was the guy he punched who had the $100 million contract.
He got thrown out the
That's
door.
Why it's good.
Life is great.
Listen, like, and the Jordan
he got his $100 million, the other guy got thrown out.
And the Jordan Poole comp tour is taking place right now with the Washington Wizards. I mean, this we talked last time we were on. I was on. Sorry, you guys. We got a pod between them. But we talked last time I was on about the corner three turnaround of the bench. Oops, it missed. About the lean-in pose on a three that was blocked. And then last night, they're down 20-some-odd to the Hawks. This dude threw a lob off the backboard to Kuzma down 20-something. Jordan Poole is the most hilarious basketball player in the NBA right now.
The chemistry of the Wizards is great. I don't care what anybody says.
It's good enough to be the Grizzlies.
Right. By the way, before we go, I recognize that the Thunder did what's good for them. I understand why they did it. However, when you trade a first-round pick for a swap and it's used as a first-round pick in a deal, you've done very well. I think we can agree with that. Can we agree with that?
I would say this trade made sense for everyone. That's what I would say. I think it was a good trade for everybody involved. It was good for the Clippers. Okay. It was good for the Sixers. And it was good for the Thunder because every team had a different thing they needed.
Also, there will not be, just to clean something up, there will not be IST, in-season tournament games next Tuesday because it's election day. There's no games.
Oh, well.
Okay. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to McMahon. Thank you to Bontemps. Thank you to Jackson. Thank you to Daniel Stanzik, who's a fill-in producer, looking over Jackson's shoulder like somebody I'd be looking over your shoulder, McMahon, at all times. Thank you, listening to Hoop Collective. We'll talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.